The Protectors of the Wood episode series. Episode number 41. 110 in the shade. The sweltering atmosphere in her cottage was unbearable. The windows were open, but the air was still. Abby went over her conversation with Sule and Nico word by word. She was thrilled that these teenagers actually cared for her. But Sule's comment that Abby had been locked in that cottage too long, well, it cut deep.
People think I'm some kind of leader. They believe in me, take risks for me. But I can't do anything to help. I don't deserve to be a leader. And yet, there's this strange thing I keep noticing. Our group is growing. They enjoy what we're doing. When I'm not looking, obsessed with my own problems, our group mysteriously grows. It's like a garden. You go away for a few days and come back and, surprise, it's flourishing on its own. You planted it, and then the sun and the rain do their work. Just think about what Sule and Nico had to say.
Abby reminded herself that 100 degrees on a cloudless day was not the time to count on the garden flourishing on its own. After another cooking adventure with treats from her forest garden, she went on a watering binge again in the evening twilight. During the night, the air cooled down, and she fell asleep with a quiet mind. Just before sunrise, the blue jays made their shrill sounds outside her window. The light of the new day was dawning. She was intolerably thirsty and drank off 4 glasses of cold water. She took a cold shower, dressed, and ate peaches, apples, and figs with a few more glasses of water. Hoping for a cool breeze, she walked outside and inspected the churchyard. The lawn was turning brown, drying up. But her gardens were growing and full of life. The flowers and vegetables were crowding each other. She spent the following 2 hours moving compost and selected plants to the youth garden. A stalker, the one with blonde hair who had grabbed his colleague by the shoulder the day before, leaned against the fence near the front gate and watched her the entire time. She tried to ignore him, but finally began to work on the flowers within 10 feet of him. The stalker stared at Abby.
Hot day, isn't it?
I didn't know I was so interesting.
Abby replied without looking up at him.
Hey, it's a free world.
Sort of.
She was thinking,
I've got to shut up. This is doing me no good.
The relentless sun made her dizzy. Her stomach was empty, but she was not hungry. Eventually, she gave up. After an apple and 3 glasses of water, she headed out to the preschool on her bike, not caring that she would be late. A plain, used Ford sedan followed her at a distance. At the preschool, Rose immediately apologized for not giving Abby the news already. The state had called for the closure of all schools for 2 days. Rose had been calling parents and talking to a few in person. Yesterday's temperature had reached a record 110 degrees, with no relief in sight. Strangely enough, Abby rode back home in disappointment. She had looked forward to the time with the children as a relief from a host of other worries. The opening to her mind had so much traffic trying to get in that all movement had stopped in an impossible bottleneck. Thoughts of yesterday's incident with Jeremy were accompanied by overwhelming panic. The terror of her responsibility for the mapstick and the briefcase left her staring, glassy-eyed at nothing. She forced herself to eat a little bit at a time, took another shower, and lay there in a daze.
All things reach out for the sunlight. The hand of life everywhere. The wind in the trees whispered to the leaves. The waves of peace fill the air.
The whole day went by. In the evening, she watered everything all over again, and once again tried to keep some food down. She longed for a radio to hear a weather report. The street was almost empty. Even the stalkers were indoors. The next day, the waves of heat just kept coming. Abby woke very early and watered most of the plants and trees in the yard. In the secret place between the bit of grass and the thick vines and young maple trees, there was a group of interesting low green herbs that Abby recognized as celandine, an herb often collected by Wendy, not from her garden but in the wild. Abby knew that when spring came and the plants bloomed with lovely yellow flowers with four delicate petals, Wendy would be interested. In the meantime, Abby mothered them like her garden plants and looked forward to showing them to Wendy. Back out on the broad lawn, she saw Tuck standing in his open door. He called to her. Leaving her bucket on the grass, she followed him up to his office, where the overworked air conditioner gave some relief. Tuck poured her a tall glass of cold water from a pitcher on the big table. He handed Abby a $20 bill and begged her to go to the hardware store and buy a long hose.
"I can't stand to see you walking back and forth on a day like this. Ugh."
He spoke as if this were the most important problem on his list.
"I have money already. I'm just sick of being followed by these stalkers. Isn't there something illegal about what they're doing?"
"Of course there is. But what are we going to do about it? Give Chief Santiago the job of putting a stop to it? You remember what he said at the meeting here, don't you? Something about our putting this battle beyond the reach of justice. You're on your own now. Those were his words. We dug this hole by not prosecuting them for assaulting you and Phoebe. But of course, that probably would have worked out badly, too. This is the power of billions of dollars. Normal people are helpless."
Abby nodded. She was sorry she'd even brought the subject up, and had no stomach whatsoever for a complaining session with Reverend Tuck. She was thinking,
"We're already so depressed, we can hardly function."
"Worst heat wave in the history of the River Valley. Nothing else even close. State of emergency. Oh, I appreciate you don't want all your hard work to go to waste, but please get a long hose. Get three of them."
"I can't believe you don't have one already."
Abby had lost patience with Tuck's lack of practical awareness. Tuck shrugged.
"We used to. Who knows what happened to it?"
"I'll buy it today. But I was wondering, do you think this emergency will last through our festival on Saturday? Or even the election on Sunday?"
"No, I'm pretty sure it won't. Sometime tomorrow it should end. And Saturday or Sunday, it might turn unseasonably cold, with thunderstorms on either day."
"I'm glad we got our plan organized early."
Abby was trying to be encouraging.
"At least we're ready for Saturday."
"That's right. And we do have a permit for the scaffold now. Eddie promises to come with a team to set it up tomorrow. It might look good to have it up for the weekend."
"Nice."
She smiled at Tuck.
"Any other news we should look out for?"
"No. Things have been so quiet, it's got me nervous. As far as I can tell, Ellen has this election wrapped up, and yet our opponents have done nothing. I never thought they'd give up so easily. Maybe the involvement of Bishop Beckett has forced them to be more cautious.
Great move on your part to invite him. That bishop doesn't look like he misses much.
Although, I can't take any credit for it. All I did was call his office to say one of our trustees was retiring, and he called me back with his own arrangements. The timing and his involvement are all his own doing.
Does he do this kind of thing regularly?
Tuck smiled.
Well, he gets around in unexpected ways. He's hard to predict, and has a reputation as an eccentric. His theology is surprising, perhaps shocking to some. But he's been diplomatic enough to survive. Many groups have tried to attack him, but they don't seem to get very far. I'm not sure how he does it.
Abby was trying to understand her intuition regarding the bishop. She felt sure he was unusual, special, and very subtle. She thought he would make a formidable leader in a real controversy.
Is the youth council meeting still on for tomorrow night? I'll be meeting with my group at 8.
As far as I know, we'll be in the basement at 8. Let's hope for the best.
I can't wait for this to be over.
Oh, do I wish. Let's struggle through a few more days.
Tuck walked her down to the side door. The heat hit her like a blast from a furnace. She pulled her hat over her ears and shielded her eyes and went out shopping. In half an hour, she struggled home with a hose and a fan. The young man in the hardware store had smiled and said that she was his only customer so far that day. He was obviously hinting that she should stick around in his air-conditioned paradise and chat. But Abby had no energy for anything but getting home, drinking water, and lying down. Her new fan was cause for tremendous joy. She did a little cooking, read some of Black Elk Speaks, took a cold shower, and drifted off to sleep. Abby woke again at the crack of dawn.
Today's Friday. Tomorrow is the festival. Sunday's the election.
Somehow, she couldn't believe these days would actually come, that these events would actually take place. It all seemed so unreal. She attached the hose and experimented with a new watering method. Of course, the hose wouldn't reach the new vegetable garden, much less the flower garden or the wild area. But it did reduce the distance she had to walk by more than half. She left most of the job for the evening and returned to the cottage to eat. The first bag of vegetables was already running low. Janet knocked on the door to say that Rose had called. The preschool was canceled again, and Janet took the opportunity to gossip for a few minutes.
Everyone's coming to the festival, and everyone wants to vote. They don't care if it's 120 degrees. You had all better be ready tomorrow. And on Sunday, our little election will get more media coverage than a vote for governor.
Abby felt encouraged. At least, she would have something positive to say at the meeting that evening. Eddie knocked on her door to announce that his group would be putting up the scaffolding. She stood in the shade and watched them for half an hour and brought out a pitcher of water and cups. The scaffolding did look very official, like a giant announcement that renovations were indeed happening. After the group had gone, Abby drank more water and lay down with the fan on. She was no more able to think about Jeremy or the safety of the Mapstick than before. Her mind had gone numb and simply threw major worries in a closet and locked the door. Yet in that closet, a plan was brewing in the darkness. The afternoon crawled by. She went on a watering marathon toward evening and felt the first faint indications of a change in the weather. Thin, wispy clouds traveled over the half-moon cliffs and out over the valley. A breeze blew from the setting sun. Abby ate more apples and a few fried potatoes and turnips with onions. And then it was time for the youth council meeting. She had no idea what to expect and had no intention of volunteering for any festival activities except tours on the Birdwatcher's Path. But she did decide to get there 15 minutes early, knowing that Phoebe was usually late from her job at the toy store. To Abby's surprise, Phoebe was already there, setting up folding chairs in the basement room.
Oh, am I glad to see you.
Phoebe stepped toward Abby and embraced her.
I was hoping you'd be early. Sit and talk to me for a bit. Jeremy's worried about you. He thinks the pressure's too much for all of us. I decided we should take a vacation after the festival tomorrow, or after the election on Sunday. Maybe I could go to Rivergate with you.
Did Jeremy tell you what happened?
You mean when you hugged on the leaf pile and heard the click of the camera?
Abby's mind went blank again for a moment. She just couldn't think about it.
Jeremy says these stalkers are driving you crazy.
It was all my fault. All my fault.
Phoebe squeezed her arm.
That's what Jeremy says. Except he means it's all his fault.
Phoebe put her hand under Abby's chin and made her look up.
Neither of us are mad. We're just worried about you. Where are your friends? Your friends, got that? We're not going crazy over this, but we want to help.
Abby was afraid she would burst into tears.
But I've messed up. I've put us in danger, put everyone in danger.
Jeremy thinks he put us in danger because he didn't listen to you. But I want to know where these perfect people are. Who does everything right? I haven't met those people, so I think I'll take you and Jeremy.
Stop. I'll burst into tears and people will arrive.
Don't worry. I got this meeting. Tomorrow's already set up. You're the one who's had a hard time, all alone in this pressure cooker. We've been having fun with the soccer players, the band, the vendors, Sarah's friends from the college. Sarah's teamed up with Sule and Nico and Callie. Are they full of energy? We've got this festival covered. Just sit back. Do whatever you want. By the way, you did a fabulous job on Sunday. I've been wanting to talk to you about it. But no time now. Just take it easy.
I'll run the birdwatcher's path again.
Perfect. That was an amazing success. I can't believe you found a way to satisfy everyone. Even those trustees, the bishop.
At that moment, Sarah, Stephanie, and Ellie arrived with trays of sandwiches, and Tuck lugged a cooler of cold water into the room. Callie, George, Isaiah, Ishmael, and Eddie all followed soon after. In a few minutes, the seats were full of chattering people. Phoebe's soccer players trooped in, including Sule with Nico and Gio. They walked up to Abby to shake hands. Friends of Sarah's entered after the long drive from Evansville. Shannon, captain of Phoebe's soccer team, handed out the schedule of the next day's event and led the group through a long series of details, including volunteer assignments and objectives for the day. They canceled a few activities and added a table for students against fossil fuels. Isaiah stood up and spoke to the whole room.
It's going to cool off and maybe get stormy by evening. Let's speed up the timing, start the concert earlier. I don't want us rained out.
And there's going to be a lot of parents with small children. It would help to cut it a little short. Sunday will be a big day for everyone. This election has stirred up a lot of feelings. All we have to do is be calm, be organized, and finish before the storm.
Abby was thinking,
I'm starting to feel more like myself. Maybe things aren't so bad.
But after the meeting, as people were milling around, having a few last words, George took her aside.
I have to warn you. They're up to something. I gave Peabody the photos of the birdwatcher's path. The building with the scaffolding piled up after the lower part got painted, and some pictures that included the garden. I was worried he'd throw them back in my face. I knew it wasn't what he wanted, but he was suspiciously happy. Paid me extra. Even Morphy complimented me. Something's wrong. I wish I knew what.
Don't worry, George. Whatever it is, all we can do is go through it together. Whatever happens, stick to the plan. I'll be there.
George smiled.
Thanks.
He gave a sigh of relief. Later on, Abby spoke to Tuck for a few minutes at the side door. His meeting had also gone well. The air was definitely cooler.
Oh, it's only 90 degrees.
Tuck thanked her endlessly for bringing her mother in to help. Abby couldn't quite understand what had thrilled Tuck so deeply, but she felt good for the first time all week as she walked back to the cottage. Thanks for listening. Episode 42 is coming soon. To hear all the episodes, find our website at www.protectorsofthewood.com.
Okay. 1, 2. 1, 2, 3, 4. Here we go. Here we go.
Gotta see.